Cryptic Code. We're your hosts, Harmon.
And Jessica.
And we like to talk about cryptids, aliens, and generally anything spooky.
And we cuss. A lot.
Indeed. And Season 3's inaugural two-parter continues. Last time we investigated a supposed invasion of flying saucers over the nation's capital, the Washington, D.C. UFO incident. And why Project Blue Book might have thought that this extraterrestrial intrusion was a capstone of 1952, one of the busiest years in ufology, that has since been known as the Big Flap. They could not have suspected that their aerial encounters with otherworldly entities was just the beginning. In 2 months, there would be another incident, one that would eclipse the Washington incident and turn a small, humble West Virginian town into a landmark of the paranormal. I refer, of course, to the sleepy village of Flatwoods, West Virginia. Before we get too deep into things, I just want to take a moment to credit my sources, the big ones at least. First and foremost is the Braxton County Monster, the cover-up of the Flatwoods Monster Revealed, by Frank C. Fascino. It's honestly a really good book, for getting the nitty-gritty details, although I do personally think he strays a little too far into speculation later on in the book. The next is Unsolved Mysteries by Emily G. Thompson, which has a very informative section on the Flatwoods Monster. But with that out of the way, we'll dive right into the case. It was the evening of September 12, 1952. The weather was in that nice twilight between the summer heat and the autumn chill, and a group of 10 young boys were making the most of it by playing football outside their school. The group consisted of Neil Nunley, Teddy Neil, and most notably brothers Edison and Freddie May, and more of their friends. Around 7:30 p.m., one of them cried out, "Look there!" as they pointed to the sky, directing their attention to a massive ball of fire screeching across the sky. Frey May described it as, quote, red, yellow, orange, with flames trailing behind it, end quote. It was flying low, just above the tops of the mountains, and it was fast. The youths only saw it for about 3 seconds before it crashed over the horizon. The kids recognized where it had landed, the farm of one Bailey Fisher. A later investigator, one Ivan T. Sanderson, would give this description based off of witness testimony. Quote, "This object, this large glowing object, which appeared to be about the size of a house, seemed to pause when it topped the hill, then began to sink, instead going down a sort of trajectory. It stopped and sank slowly down the hill, and they could see this light pulsating behind the crest of the hill," end quote. The kids weren't the only ones to see the bizarre blaze. Local businessman Jack Davis was interviewed by Frank Fascino years later, and he confirmed he saw the same thing. He was visiting his in-laws when, on his way home, he came to the top of a hill near Stout Cemetery. There he saw an oblong shape flying just above the trees in a bright light. At first, he thought it was a plane on fire, but he realized it was too fast and too big to be an ordinary aircraft. Another witness was one A.M. Jordan, who was interviewed by Saucerian Magazine. The article read, quote, "A.M. Jordan has lived his many years with his feet firmly on the ground. He has not read Ray Palmer, Fate, Amazing, nor much else other than newspapers and the Bible. And no one who ever reads the Bible can lie. Remember that, Jess. He saw the object which landed on the hill and was able to describe it in a cold, matter-of-fact manner. Evidently, it came over the horizon from the southeast, as he was sitting on the porch. He did not look up until it had come into his view overhead and flashed it down in a southwesterly direction toward the hilltop opposite him. It was an elongated object. The top of it was a light shade of red and the bottom bright red. From the rear shot red balls of fire. He found it was a jet plane at the time, though he saw no wings. He did not see the nose of the object clearly. It proceeded across the sky, then halted suddenly. It seemed to fall rapidly towards the hilltop," end quote. So that's two witnesses saying that it would stop and then went down. Back with the kids, though. After this great ball of fire, they ran to the house of one Kathleen May, mother to both Eddie and Freddie. Kathleen had just arrived from her job at a local beauty salon. Not even having the time to switch out of her uniform before a gaggle of meddling kids burst through the front door wanting to get their mystery gang on.
Ew.
Like, go investigate a mystery.
I know, but...
Why do you make that weird?
It just feels a little icky.
Why? Like zoinks, dude. Why you gotta make it weird, dude?
Jinkies.
I know, no harm. I'm gonna fight the intrusive thoughts, but not gonna say that? Okay.
Wow.
Well, they explained to the probably bewildered Kathleen what they had seen and pleaded with her to let them go investigate. And, like the cool mom she was, she simply answered, "Well, you're not going by yourself." The house was also being visited by 18-year-old member of the National Guard named Jean Lemon. Perhaps feeling protective over Kathleen and the children, Jean decided to join them along with his dog. So let me just list some members of the group. Hey, you know, it is the Scooby Gang. They have a dog now.
Zoinks.
So let me just list the members of the group so we know exactly who we're discussing. The group consists of Kathleen May, Jean Lemon, Neil Nunley, who is 14, Teddy Neil, who is 13, Edison May, also 13, Freddie May, who is 11, Ronald Shaver, age 10, and they're joined by 6-year-old Tommy Heyer.
What are all these teenagers doing out in the woods in their school, whatever, with a fucking 6-year-old?
Man, it was the 50s. Everyone had like 8 kids. You could afford to lose some. Like the baby cages. Have you ever seen that shit?
Yes, I love those. I want one.
This podcast will be used in a future child abuse trial. There are more kids who saw it at the playground, but these were the ones who went to the May household and wanted to join in on a little investigation. The group left the house around 7:40 p.m., taking an access road up the hill. When they came across a dead end, they switched to a grass path that led them across an open field into a wire gate. They unwired the section of fence, slipped through, then rewired it back into place, which is starting to feel not exactly legal.
Why would you just not leave it unwired until you went back out?
I don't know. It feels like these children and their mom are committing a crime.
Yeah, they're trespassing at this point for sure.
They found themselves wandering through a wooded area as night began to fall. However, some of them spotted a strange glow in the valley below them. It was a sphere that, quote, seemed to pulsate, dim and brighten, end quote. Descriptions placed it at about 22 feet high and resembled a ball of fire. Not all of them saw it, though, due to the brush obscuring the view of some of the smaller kids. Now, some people actually take this to mean that the object moved after it crashed. Well, crash with quotation marks. That it landed on the farm, but then moved somewhere else. Regardless, those that noticed it did not seem to pass on the information as it continued up the hill to the Fisher farm. As they approached, they came upon a thick fog. It smelled of sulfur, and they said it was almost like a burnt TV tube. Kathleen and Jean's 2 flashlights could barely pierce the encroaching mist, and with night firmly settled, they could barely see anything. Though their vision was limited, they could hear a high-pitched whine, like electrical compressors. Suddenly, the dog began to bark. He braced as if to intimidate a predator before shooting up the hill, disappearing into a fog. A moment later, it came bounding down the hill past the group all the way to town. Just abandoning them. You're on your own, Racky. We dropped Racky. I'm very funny. After that, Jean took the lead as they neared the tree line. Let's say you're one of these children, and you just saw a dog do that. I kind of want to go the fuck home.
What the dog doing?
What the dog doing? Get the fuck out of here. That's what it's doing. What the dog doing?
Does this hurt the dog?
This kills the man. Anyway, a strange hissing noise startled the group, putting them on edge. Kathleen scanned the surrounding woods and thought she could make out a large, shadowy figure peeking out from behind a tree. Jean looked there too, noticing a pair of orange eyes watching them. But they're high up. Really high up. It had to be an animal on a branch, he thought, and he whipped his flashlight onto the shape. And then he saw it. The Flatwoods Monster. Kathleen turned her light upon it and saw a 10-foot-tall metallic figure looming towards them. Its body was a green hourglass shape, with a red, spade-shaped head, with two enormous orange eyes that shot out beams of light that seemed to almost scan the area. The thing appeared to be glowing as it illuminated the trees around it. It emerged out from behind the tree, hovering a clear foot above the ground as it raced towards the group. Jean stumbled, falling to the ground before scrambling to his feet. Kathleen was the closest, saying she was, quote, the length of a small car, end quote, from it. So close that the thing actually spewed oil all over her uniform. The group then did what anyone would in their situations. They ran the fuck away.
Good.
Kathleen, Jean, and the kids turned and ran as fast as they could, tearing through the brush and branches, propelled by a desperate, gut-wrenching fear. If the thing was chasing them, they did not know, but they did not stop until they're all the way back to the safety of the May House. Now, Jess, I take it you're familiar with the Flatwoods Monster.
I am.
Yeah, it's pretty up there in the cryptid community, particularly for those in the Appalachian and West Virginia region. And it has some other names, such as the Braxton County Monster, the Green Monster, the Phantom of Flatwoods, among others. My favorite is Braxy.
Aww. Yeah, that's kind of cute. Now, I learned about the Flatwoods Monster when I was a small child because my aunt and uncle purchased a camp in the middle of the woods in Flatwoods.
Oh, and they told you about it?
Yeah, so we used to sit around the campfire at this camp, and every summer somebody would tell the Flatwoods Monster story.
Why is that, like, every Friday the 13th movie?
I don't know.
Each one has a scene.
They all go to the lake, and they're like, Jason Voorhees, blah, 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 murdered. Not really murdered, but left to die in the water.
He made it sound like an action movie.
In the first movie, his mom was the murderer, but now he is.
Stephen King actually wants to write a book from Jason's perspective. Oh, jeez. So you would just gather around the campfire and talk about the Flatwoods Monster?
Yeah, we would just gather around the campfire and talk about Flatwoods Monster and, like, all the shit.
Sing
and
the then campfire song.
We'd go night swimming in the piece of river that they own down there. Like, literally the scariest shit.
Oh, my God.
My family lived a horror movie.
An 80s slasher.
You did.
You told scary stories in the isolated woods and then immediately went to jump out.
There was like an abandoned building on the property that they owned. We used to go explore that and all sorts of shit.
Who owned this?
My aunt and uncle.
Do they not like you?
I don't know.
Do they want you to get carried off by Braxy?
They still own it and they won't sell it to me, so they probably hate me.
Can we go there? Oh my God, imagine if we could record there.
I don't have keys to
it. Could you ask them?
They're in Florida.
Oh, do they not have phones?
I mean, they won't.
Are they
not,
Amish?
They won't mail me keys to their camp.
Naturally, once they're safe at home, Kathleen and the kids called the police and reported what they saw. But something our more urban listeners might not know is that in rural communities, police are pretty scarce. At the time, Braxton County had a whopping 2 state troopers at any given time. Whole county. The local sheriff, Officer Robert Carr, was busy investigating reports of a plane crash in Frametown. We'll get back to this. So he couldn't respond. Law enforcement was so understaffed that Kathleen's call had to be answered by one Cecil Rose, who wasn't a police officer. He was the town jailer. Now, one thing that apparently used to be common practice in more rural areas back then was for short-staffed police departments to use reporters and journalists as auxiliary investigators. They would tell them to basically go investigate a crime. They can write an article about it, I guess, and it saves the police time. Such was the case when State Trooper Corporal Ted Tribbett called local reporter of the Braxton Democrat, A. Lee Stewart. He deputized Stewart over the phone and tasked him with responding to the May call. This is going to be a long quote. Oh, what are you giggling about?
No, just imagine calling someone and being like, hey, you're a deputy now, please go check this out. But also, police in rural areas, like, that is a huge issue, like, not having enough of them. Especially, I don't know if you've ever been to Philippi.
Yeah.
Okay, so Barber County has one sheriff. One. Yeah. This man, his police cruiser, with, like, all his decals and everything on it, that, like, is his official police vehicle, is a Dodge Nitro. The Dodge Nitro was discontinued in 2011. West Virginia!
Is that bad?
Yeah.
Is it slow or
typically
something?
Police... it doesn't mean it's... I drive a Dodge Nitro. But...
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And that car's shit.
Yes,
no offense.
My point. That is what I'm getting at.
When I heard Dodge, I was thinking a muscle car. I didn't realize it was
that. A Dodge Nitro.
It's so, just a cube.
Yes.
The cube of
so
justice.
No, it's not fast, really. But also, like, it's just the fact that, like, a police department should not be using a car that has not been manufactured since 2011. Like, usually... they have enough money, they get new cruisers like every 1 or 2 years, you know, because they want them to be safe and not break down every 5 seconds. For anyone who doesn't know what's wrong with the Dodge Nitro, I have put a new motor in mine. I did that within less than 6 months of owning it. I've owned it for roughly 2 years now. It's also had new starters, like 3 or 4 new starters put into it, and a heater core.
Hello, we're the car code.
It just gets... It's a piece of shit.
In an interview with Frank Fraschino, he said, quote, I proceeded down to the home of Kathleen May. As far as I know, it's the only involvement that the West Virginia State Police had with this particular reporting. On the road out to Flatwoods, I passed Stewart's store, and Bill Stewart's was working at the store of his father. I picked him up. He directed me to the house and, in fact, was there when I talked to the people. He also went up on top of the mountain with me that night. I was the first person of authority to get to the maze. It was sheer turmoil. 3 boys were very sick, sick to their stomachs, and all of them were wheezing and coughing. Mrs. May's eyes were as red as they could be, and sort of weepy, and everybody talked at once, so I sat down.
She was smoking weed.
I'm picturing... Braxy is Snoop Dogg now. I also just love that this man, this deputized journalist, went to the local corner store and just got a deputy. Basically just recruited a dude from the corner store and be like, hey, you want to go fight an alien with me?
That's the most West Virginian thing for someone to fucking say yes to. You know what I mean?
Let's go, Mountaineers!
Let's go!
How would you feel if you're like down at the, I don't know, fucking Go Mart and some reporter is like, you, we're gonna go shoot Mothman, you in?
I mean, to be fair, that Go Mart in Sutton, that would happen there.
Well, yeah, it's right next to Flatwoods.
Yeah, I know. But like that Go Mart specifically, like some man would walk, like some sheriff would walk in there and be like, hey, deputy, let's go. And it's like, I'm not a deputy. You are now.
It's like D&D, where they'll just be like, hello, random traveler. Will you clear the land of monsters?
Do you want to start a campaign?
Why are you going to say, do you want to start an international incident? Anyway, as soon as I realized that the whole thing took place on the mountain right behind the house, I started asking if I could get somebody there to direct me to the spot. Of course, the answer was a very emphatic no. After a little coaxing, I convinced the 2 older boys, Lemon and Nunley, to go up to the mountain with us. So we left.
The under boys. The mountains. Sorry.
The audience isn't going to get that. So we left. The boys, Bill Stewart's, and I. We were armed. We had a 12-gauge shotgun and a couple of handguns. 2 or 3 other people who lived right around there came up and went with us. They're also armed. On the way up, the boys were hesitating, wanting to go back, and we coaxed them on. As a matter of fact, I had my hand up around one of the boys' necks. Under his breath, he was actually crying like a whipped pup. We went up to the tree where this thing was supposed to have happened. That makes him sound like an asshole.
Yeah, imagine you're choking this kid and being like, why is it crying? Why is it crying?
You're gonna help me fight this goddamn monster, I swear to God.
Come on, boy, we're going to find the alien. Don't cry. Don't cry.
This is barely a...
West Virginia!
A very 50s story where it's like, it's very, I strangled the child until it told me what I wanted.
West Virginian 50s story.
And also the fact that they're just walking up the mountain and neighbors are coming out like a pissed off Mayberry, just being like, are you going to go shoot something? Let us join you.
Fellow West Virginians, please don't get offended, but like, this is the most fucking white trash bullshit.
You have my 12 gauge and my axe.
Fuck.
Upon arriving at the scene, we were always reminded by the boys about the odor that made them sick. We got down close to the ground, and we could still pick up an odor. They identified it as the same odor that made them sick. Imagine, again, being this boy, being strangled by the fucking local newspaper editor, who's like, this is where it is? I smell monsters about.
This man is literally, like, rubbing his nose in it. He's like, did you do this? It's like what you're doing to a fucking dog.
No. Stewart came down. Oh my god, yeah, he said that identifies the same smell.
Yeah,
so
he made this poor kid.
Touch like, grass, fucker.
This is like when I threw up all that fireball. Like, if I had had to smell fireball the next day, I would have thrown right back up.
We kind of did that, though. We're kind of like, look what you did. Look what you did.
You literally, like...
Are you sure you want this out on the internet?
I don't
Jess?
Care.
You, the story you were about to tell?
It's not like you shoved my face in it and you were like, look what you did. But I did definitely have to finish cleaning it up. That was like, I will never... I have this white fluffy rug at my place. And
she put in entire... Oh, sorry.
I threw up a lot. Like, I drank an entire fifth of Fireball pretty much by myself.
She didn't eat anything that day.
I also had three other alcoholic beverages. And, I threw up into this white fluffy rug. Making it white and fluffy again was a problem.
She put an entire bottle of Dawn into this.
And baking, an entire box of baking soda.
And we would just rub it in.
For hours. Oh,
anyway.
The rug thing. I got the rug clean. We got the rug clean.
And it's just pouring buckets of water on.
But anyway, essentially, this is the same concept of, this made you sick? Here, rub your nose in it. Like, if, yeah, that's awful.
We took the long way around the barn with this metaphor.
Poor child.
She's getting traumatized, and like, this is what happens. He got deputized, and all the power immediately went to his head.
This kid definitely grew up to be one of those kids that's like, yep, please hook a car battery to my because of this situation.
Why the fuck do you say things like that?
Future Harmon? Sorry, man.
I don't think you are.
Can't believe that made the 50%.
Yeah, just this fucking reporter got deputized as me, like, I'm the law. I can do whatever the fuck
I
want.
He literally got deputized and was like, oh my god. Police brutality! Fuck, man.
It's kind of fucked up. We had two large flashlights and an electric lantern, so we quickly picked up the skid marks. We just spotlighted around because not one of us was inclined to hunt for something we didn't know what it was in the dark. We decided to go back to the maze. We're on the mountain probably 30 to 40 minutes, end quote. I love how they got that far. It's like, oh shit, it's dark. Fuck. Eventually, the sheriff did arrive to the house. He was distracted by two different reports of burning, crashing planes. With one we already mentioned in Frametown, and the other in Sugar Creek. The Sugar Creek crash was reported to happen shortly after 7:30, so right around when the kids saw it. Now, I should probably address this. The supposed burning plane was initially reported by a man named Woodrow Eagle, who saw a fiery ball in the sky, concluding that it was an aircraft on fire and about to crash. Sheriff Carr did attempt to investigate the site twice, but each time his police dogs refused to go up the hill. I also want to expand on the gas. The group had intense physical reactions to the gas as they spent the next few hours vomiting, as well as having swollen throats. Even the dog was seen throwing up in public.
The poor dog!
In some versions, I keep finding conflicting things on this. The dog straight up fucking died. Depending on which version you ask. I like to choose that the dog lived, because I feel like that would be a more consistent detail.
What the dog doing?
Going back to his creator.
Hear me out. I know this is a fucked up theory.
It's chocolate.
What if... Well, I guess maybe it's probably too far away for that.
For what?
I'm like, what if this was a plane crash survivor who was just like...
10 feet tall and floating?
10 feet tall and on fire.
10 feet tall, on fire, and floating. Right before he hit the ground, he unlocked his inner psychic powers.
Unfortunately, what
the fuck are you about to say?
I was about to say, I've smelled burning people, and it is not a good smell.
I thought you were going to tell me about some motherfucker who got set on fire and flew.
No.
I was about to say, Jess, what have you seen?
But, like, the smell of burning people is quite foul. It's like if you decided to cook, like, rancid pork. I was an EMT, dude.
Okay, that's the context we needed. I think all the listeners were just like, what the fuck?
Probably.
For a second. I probably thought you were like Sweeney Todd.
Smells like piss.
Smells like piss.
Ew. My
boys. Where was I? Fuck. But Stuart wasn't the only one to investigate the site that night. Turns out that the Fisher Farm was visited by the National Guard. Not Lemon. The officer in charge was Dale Livett, who was ordered by the United States Air Force to take 2 detachments of men to search both Frametown and Sugar Creek and have about 50 to 60 men sent to the Fisher Farm. Livett was specifically asked to retrieve samples of bark, leaves, and dirt. The most prominent sample he discovered was an oil substance found on a tree, which was sent to the Air Force, but Levitt never received any updates on it. Their search also revealed a lack of burn marks, which is odd if this was a plane crash. Now, the Mays group was not the only ones to report encountering a creature that night. The following encounter was actually given to the Flatwoods Monster Museum in 2015, via a letter delivered by the witness's granddaughter. On September 12th, in the town of Heaters, Audra Harper is walking to the store of her friend. Heaters, it is worth noting, is about 5 miles north of Flatwoods. The two girls decide that they could save some time by taking a shortcut through the forest. As they made their way through the woods, they looked over and spot a ball of fire flicking through the trees on an opposite hill. Audra dismissed it as a lantern of someone fox chasing, but when she looked a second time, she noticed that the fire was replaced by a person-shaped figure that was, quote, 3 heights of a man, end quote. The girls were scared, taking their pace from a pleasant walk to a terrified sprint. In a letter to the Flatwoods Monster Museum, she wrote, quote, "We started running, crossing a barbed wire fence I never even saw and came to a gate. We opened it, and, name redacted, started to close it. It's right behind us," she said. "I didn't think it was possible, for it'd have to run twice the distance we did. I turned around and fastened the gate before I looked up. There it stood. I can't remember anything but this big black shape," end quote. They managed to get to the store where they pleaded for help, even asking for a gun to defend themselves with. But their concerns were dismissed. The clerk and patrons thought they had just imagined it. So instead of police or a piece, the only help they got was 2 boys who offered to walk them home. Gaslight, gatekeep, girl boss. Don't you just love the patriarchy?
Yeah,
isn't that great? Fucking women, am I right? Always thinking they see encrypteds. Did you just roar XD me?
Yeah.
You were the kid who growled at people in high school, weren't you?
I was not, actually.
Really?
I didn't start growling till college.
You grew into it.
I did.
You're a late bloomer. A late growler. You wolfed out.
I waited to get tattoos until I was 20. So, you know. I had to embrace emo culture again. Considering the bullshit that's on my body.
Now we're going to move on to the events of the following day. According to a report from the Civilian Saucer Investigation, around 6:30 a.m., the director of the Board of Education witnessed a craft they described as a flying saucer taking off near their house. They reported to a local newspaper and only then learned about the maze encountered in Flatwoods. Another sighting that occurred that day was near Strange Creek, 20 miles south of Flatwoods. The Snitowski family was driving home after visiting relatives in Cleveland, Ohio, taking the long scenic route back to their home in New York. George was driving while his wife, Edith, was attending to their baby. They were on Route 4, traveling along a dark, isolated stretch of country road. Suddenly, their car died and rolled to a stop. George tried the starter, but the battery was dead, despite showing no signs of being low. With a frustrated sigh, he got out to take a look. Walking to the hood, George looked over. Beside the road was a valley full of trees, and he could barely make out what appeared to be a bright light moving through the woods. Quote, "I was able to make out the outline of some kind of luminescent spheroid. It was like a frosted street lamp, a couple of hundred times enlarged," end quote. He also mentioned that the light seemed to float as it swayed through the trees. Turning his attention back to the car, he didn't even have time to open the hood before he heard Eve scream. To quote their statement to the Flying Saucer Institute, quote, "I turned around and when I saw it, I sagged against the car. The figure was standing immobile on the fringe of the road about 30 feet to my right. It was a good 8 or 9 feet tall and in the general shape of a man, with a head and shoulders and a bloated body. It was sharply silhouetted against the light beam from the spheroid, and I couldn't make out any of its features," end quote. George dove back into the car, taking a knife from the glove box and huddling with his family on the floor. He gripped the blade tightly in his hand. He was terrified, but if it came to it, he would fight to protect his wife and child. Might as well go down swinging, after all. Slowly, he poked his head up and spied the creature standing in front of the car. Its hand was shaped almost like a Y, ending in two spindly fingers that stretched across the hood. But, as suddenly as they arrived, the creature turned and vanished into the woods, heading in the direction of the bright light. George said in a statement, quote, "Then my eyes caught sight of the ascending iridescent globe over the trees, and I watched it, my eyes glued to it in terrible fascination. I almost forgot Edith. It rose slowly and made intermediate stops, hanging in midair for a split second before continuing upward. And then, at about 3,000 feet, I guess, it swung back and forth like a pendulum, gathering momentum. Suddenly, it swooped in an elliptic arc and, with a dazzling trail of light, shot completely out of sight," end quote. Once both the creature and the light were gone, the car had no trouble starting. The exhausted family drove to a nearby hotel to spend the night, but in the light of the following morning, they saw something that had escaped their notice. A shape was burned into the hood of their car. It was in the same shape as the alien's hand. Have you heard this one before?
No. The way you described the hands, though, I just wanted to be like, I like rusty spoons. Mm-hmm. I like the way they feel against my salad fingers.
Something that makes this report particularly interesting is that in most of the retellings of the Snitowski encounter, the Braxton monster is described as having the same kind of skirt-like metallic bottom, but the torso is almost reptilian. Have you ever seen Braxton portrayed as like a lizard person?
No.
Do you want me to pull up a picture of it?
It sounds fucking terrifying.
Art of it, not a picture. I don't have a fucking selfie of the Flatwoods Monster.
That'd be adorable.
Just a selfie with it? Yeah. We can kind of do something similar someday. Someday. One day more. Sorry. Do, 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 boop, do, do, boop, boop, do, do, do. This is a drawing of what it's supposed to look like in that encounter.
That is terrifying. I kind of don't like that portrayal.
Fucking Braxy has a six pack. I think that's a
Braxy count be that. Ripped.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 pack. Holy shit. My friend saw Kylo Ray in the shower. He has an 8 pack. Fuck. My fingers are too dry. I can't turn pages. Now, to say the story blew up would be an understatement. Dozens of reporters flocked to the small town of West Virginia. We've seen something similar of Point Pleasant and its moth mania. Newspapers around the country printed stories about the Mays and their encounter with something not of this earth. You gotta remember, this was 1952. As we discussed in our last episode, it was one of the busiest years for UFO chasers, and the public was chomping at the bits for tales of extraterrestrial terrors. It was from one of these newspapers that a theater booker and Clarksburg native, Gray Barker, first heard of the story. Stop for applause. Are you familiar with Gray Barker?
Is he the museum dude?
Yeah, he's the museum dude. Wait, what museum?
Isn't he the guy who started the museum?
I don't believe so. I think that was a guy called Andrew Smith. Hmm. I know we briefly mentioned him in our Mothman deep dive. I know this is my third time referencing those episodes, but...
He's a museum dude.
Kinda?
Sort of, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not the museum.
You know, the museum. Now, this is my third time referencing those episodes, but hey, what do you expect? The Mothman special was kind of our, I don't know, Avengers Endgame. He reached out to Fate magazine to ask if they would commission him for an article, and they agreed, telling him to simply report the facts and avoid speculation. So, Barker packed up and headed down to Flatwoods. There, he interviewed everyone involved in the incident, placing special emphasis on the testimony of Neil Nunley because of how trustworthy and honest he appeared. He also spoke to A. Lee Stewart about his findings during Stewart's second investigation of the spot the morning after. To quote Barker's report, quote, "About 10 feet apart in the tall grass were skid marks. These proceeded from the tree where the monster was standing to the location of the alleged globe. It was as if some huge personage were on skis and had slid down the hill. But the summer skier had been light in weight, for the skis had not indented the ground. They had only ridden down the tall grass and tossed a few small stones aside. Where the globe had rested, a huge area of grass appeared to be trampled down," end quote. So they have skid marks. They have like physical evidence that at least something was there. Now, the skeptical explanation for these marks was that the land was a farm and a tractor very well could have produced the marks. The issue of that, Barker points out, is that the spot where the marks were found were too steep for a tractor to go without getting stuck. Another thing Stewart recovered was a bit of black metal. It's Norwegian music. He's like, hey, Slipknot. I know, I just got pissed off all the metalheads listening. I don't know black metal. Sorry. In an interview with Fischino, he states that the metal would not melt despite having a torch taken to it. It still didn't melt when he brought it to a local shop and had two gasoline blow torches applied to it.
Maybe you should try jet fuel.
I would like to reiterate our unconditional patriotism for the United States. That is all. Birds aren't real. Gray Barker was not the only reporter of note to visit Flatwoods, though. According to Kathleen May, the house was visited by two particular men claiming to be newspaper editors from Clarksburg. Well, originally they said they were reporters, but then changed it to editors. But that could just be a slip of the tongue, honestly. They asked to be brought to the site of the incident, and one of them broke off to investigate the aforementioned marks. When he returned 3 minutes later, he was absolutely covered in the same oil that stained Kathleen's apron. And he said one thing of note, of particular interest to us. According to Frank Fraschino, he said, quote, "Now what do you think Ed's gonna think of this when we send these in for analysis?" End quote. Ed. Does that ring any bells?
Ed?
Yeah. It should, because last episode we discussed Captain Edward Ruplett, director of Project Blue Book.
Ed!
The Air Force's official investigation into UFOs. That's right. The Flatwoods Monster was one of the big cases investigated by Project Blue Book. Did you know that?
I did not.
Yeah. Donald Kehoe, a naval aviator in the Marine Corps and also author of The Flying Saucers Are Real, so you can probably guess his opinion on this, wrote, quote, "I discovered that the Air Force had not ignored the sudden report. To avoid public attention, intelligence had worked for the West Virginia State Police, securing all the details," end quote. This was confirmed as the supposed reporters returned on the 14th of September and admit the truth. They're sent by the government to investigate, and they apologize for deceiving the Mays, saying they were worried that, had they known they were government agents, they would be less likely to cooperate. Kathleen May appeared unbothered by it, though, and she still allowed the agents to scrape oil from her apron, though she never received any news of the results. Evidently, they weren't the only people claimed to be government agents. Stewart received his own visit from three people claimed to be with the Treasury Department, but that their trip to Flatwoods was not government business and was strictly a personal interest. At their request, Stewart showed them the metal he had kept in his home in a small vial, and even cut off a small piece for them to take home with him for analysis. However, later that day, he found that the metal in the vial had lost its balance, implying it was swapped out with a fake. Now, he had their addresses and phone numbers written down, but they proved to be dead ends. They just gave him fake numbers. Spoilers. I believe in the Flatwoods Monster. I know that's a shock to everyone. But I do find it kind of suspicious that something that wouldn't burn could be easily cut.
Yeah.
Although, I guess fucking space metal.
Ooh. It's just dark matter.
How much do you want to bet Elon Musk's parents are like one of them?
Probably.
They have it somewhere. He used that metal to make the car he shot into space. The height of the Flatwoods Monster's popularity, though, would come when Kathleen May and Gene Lemon appeared on We the People, a talk show hosted by Dan Seymour on NBC television. It's actually there that we get the most famous depiction and sketch of Braxy. You probably have seen this. It's where this photo is from. I'll post this on the Twitter, of course. So, a little familiar. It's actually Elmer. But what if I told you the story of the Flatwoods Phantom didn't end there? It took some digging, but I managed to find reports of a similar creature in places outside Flatwoods. Firstly, I came across a report from Civilian Saucer Investigations Winter 1953 Quarterly Bulletin Volume 1 Number 2 Report. This is what I do instead of having a girlfriend. It was made by members William and Donna Smith, who were returning home after a vacation. I actually think it was their honeymoon, and were passing through West Virginia at the time. They heard about the story and decided to personally investigate, interviewing a number of people in the surrounding towns, including, it just so happens, Weston, West Virginia, home of the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum. The report read, quote, "In a systematic questioning of everyone in the valley, Smith found that a girl, 21 of Weston, 11 miles from the Lemon Farm, was confined in the Clarksburg Hospital for 3 weeks after having seen a figure of the same description, and making the same odor reported by witnesses of the sudden occurrences. Her mother confirmed the girl's story, that they had seen the monster when they were on their way to church, more than a week before the Mrs. May's experience," end quote. So yeah, that's something we have. Apparently Brax was seen a week before the main sighting in Flatwoods. In Weston, of all places. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
I take it you've never heard of this?
No.
Isn't this exciting?
A little.
Yeah. Another similar case happened only 3 days after the Flatwood sighting on September 15th, when citizens of Wheeling, West Virginia, home of mugshots, reported a bright, fiery object flying very low towards the ground.
Why are you bringing up stuff that, like, our lives are associated with?
I thought it would be exciting for you all.
Mugshots, though?
Consider this a sponsor. Supposedly, it came down just outside of Vineyard Hill housing development near Ogle Bay. To add to the oddness, a similar metallic smell was reported by those who lived close to the supposed crash site. Bizarrely, there were even rumors of a badly burned body of a woman being discovered. But ultimately, no evidence was found. The following day, a local newspaper named the Wheeling Intelligencer published an article with the headline, "Powered by suggestion, monster from outer space arrives via saucer." Clearly downplaying the incident, it even went as far as to dub the monster a, quote, "bashful Billy." Because no one ever saw it. Now, I will admit that this is a very real possibility of just being a case of mass hysteria. What happened in Flatwoods was scary and exciting and put the idea of monsters from fiery balls of fire in everyone's head. So, it's entirely possible that a comet or something came over Wheeling, and onlookers, with the idea of aliens freshly planted in their minds, twisted it into a fantastic story. You alright?
Yeah.
Stop vaping, it's ruining your lungs.
Probably.
You can't breathe. But there's one particular part of the article I want to call attention to. It reads, quote, "Since no members of the department are equipped with Buck Rogers rocket guns, Lieutenant Murphy declined to assign men to the area," end quote. Doesn't that sound odd? Like, mass hysteria or not, aliens or not, if you heard of a fiery ball crashing into your community, wouldn't you at least send a car over to check it out?
Probably.
Like, regardless if you think it's aliens or not, there's a very real possibility that it's, like, a plane.
Right.
Especially when people are saying there's a burned corpse next to it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's quite disturbing. But you know, it's like the Olive Garden in Clarksburg.
What?
You don't know about that?
No.
The employees kept going outside, like, for the first 3 weeks that it was open, the employees kept going outside to, like, dump the garbage every night, and they'd be like, "Wow, it smells really fucking bad out here." Like, for, like, 3 weeks, and then finally they were like, "God, this is horrible. We're gonna call somebody." They called somebody. There had been a dead body rotting behind the Olive Garden for, like, 3.5 weeks.
Jesus.
And this is in 2022.
Some mobster is like, "Vinny, when I told you to bury him in the garden, that ain't what I meant." Our condolences to the family. What the fuck was I saying?
Dead body by the plane.
Yeah, isn't that just... kids... whatever. It's because they didn't have a journalist they could deputize and have beat up children until he solved the case. Apparently, this wasn't the end of the bashful Billy's appearances, though. As the Intelligencer... That's such a weird fucking name. Intelligencer. Have you ever heard that word before? I know it's a class in Elden Ring, and that's it. The Intelligencer published another article on the 17th detailing accounts reported on the 16th. Namely, one boy's statement that reads, quote, "I saw the thing. It was from 10 to 15 feet tall and had a green body and a red head. It was spitting flames from its mouth," end quote. Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Another person called in reporting that their grandchildren saw something that scared them nearly out of their wits, but their descriptions were pretty vague. The paper also mentioned that a similar fiery object was seen outside Independence, Pennsylvania on the 15th as well. But I think it's time we move on to the legacy of the Flatwoods Monster. And given that we are, 15 pages into the script, it's quite a legacy. Firstly, we return to Gray Barker. This landmark case would spark his lifelong and oftentimes sarcastic fascination with the paranormal. You would write of a Flatwoods Monster in his 1956 book, They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers. You might have heard of that book. It's actually what started the idea of Men in Black. Yeah. And also, he would write the Flatwoods Monster in the inaugural issue of his UFO-focused magazine, The Saucerian. He even has a collection of notes and papers kept in the Clarksburg Harrison Library. Would actually like to give special thanks to for letting me come in and take a look at their articles. It's cool. It's cool being in like an old Victorian style library, especially because they keep the papers in like this old manner. This big old table, and I just had clues scattered around. I felt like, have you ever seen Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
I've seen bits and pieces.
I felt like Giles the Librarian, and it was a great feeling. Little known fact, my hometown actually has a bar with a specialty burger named after him, which is fun. One town in West Virginia even adopted a special celebration to honor Gray Barker on World UFO Day. The Buchanan Liars Contest, where contestants compete to see who can present the most compelling manufactured tall tale. The legacy of the Flatwoods Monster is still alive and well in both its namesake as well as the neighboring town of Sutton. The Flatwoods Monster Museum is a one-room museum with articles, pamphlets, and other such things on display. And I can tell you from personal experience, they have a lovely gift shop. Their most iconic item is a clay lantern made in the likeness of the creature. I actually interviewed the curator for the museum for my college newspaper. And they have a cat that they adopted.
Aww.
Named Braxy.
Aww.
Yeah, people just drop cats off there. Well, dropped one cat off there. I think it's tradition to adopt cats. But have you ever been to the museum?
I have not.
Do you want to go at some point?
I would love to.
It's down the street from the Bigfoot Museum, so we can get two in
one
day.
Oh my god. Cool.
Yeah. Dope. Based.
Ratio.
Kino. Whew. Another thing they do is the Braxy chairs. They're five big wooden chairs made to resemble the creature and are actually scattered across Sutton, Flatwoods, and Castleway. The museum even has a little scavenger hunt, and if you take pictures with all five, you win a free Braxy sticker. Have you seen these chairs?
I've not.
Would you like to?
Of course. I love chairs.
Yeah, they're pretty massive.
Oh my god!
Yeah, there's five of them. So if we ever go to the museum, I guess we can go hunt for these things.
We should.
Yeah. Okay, here's a picture of an adult. I'll put the pictures on Twitter. They're big.
They are big.
Big boys. On top of that, Sutton also hosts a restaurant called The Spot, which sells both for lanterns, cooks a variety of cryptid-inspired food, like the Area 51 calzone, and has a little stand of the monster outside. You know those things where you can put your head in, and it's like a painting?
Yeah.
Is that
I love those.
Your two people being chased by Braxy. I love it. Now, when one thinks of Braxy's appearances in video games, they most likely think of Fallout 76 depiction of Flatwoods Monster as a purple laser beam shooting random encounter. I take it you've seen that? Have you played?
I have not played it, no.
Are you familiar, though?
Yeah.
For those who don't know, Fallout 76 is set in West Virginia and actually has a bunch of cryptids in it. And for most of them, they even get a cool little audio drama. They made a fake horror audio drama called Tales from the West Virginian Hills. However, the Phantom has made some more obscure and unexpected cameos as well. You might not have played Fallout 76, Jess, but are you familiar with Legend of Zelda?
Yes.
Did you know Braxy makes an appearance in that?
No.
Yeah, it's in Majora's Mask where there's a side quest where Link must defend a farm from aliens that look similar to Braxy. This is what they look like.
Aww.
Which brings us to the fact that the Flatwoods Monster is weirdly super popular in Japan.
I kind of have heard about this. So that, I know I sent you this like couple weeks ago, and it was like that Japanese company that makes those like really fluffy stuffed animals. They have a Flatwoods Monster one, but they literally don't have like any other cryptids. Like none. Most of them are like bees, sharks, like regular animals, but they also just have Braxy.
Yeah, it seems like one, that was adorable and I love it. And once I have money, I'm gonna get it. But it's, you know how if you ask an American or anyone from North America, I'm pretty sure, what does an alien look like? They say gray and or green with big black eyes.
Yeah.
In Japan, for some reason, it seems like their popular image of an alien is the Flatwoods Monster. There's a game called Omegon, released in 1988 with Braxy as the final boss, which you can see here. The first actual video game appearance of Braxy was a Japanese game all the way back in 1987. Oh, jeez, why did I not look up pronunciation? Ginga Naikyoden. I feel like a boomer trying to pronounce his kid's favorite anime.
Kawaii.
Is this his Sword Art on fucking line I heard so much about? The most bizarre cameo, definitely, though, has to be its appearance in 2003's Everybody's Golf 4. It's just a fucking golf game. It's just, you just play golf. And at random points, Braxy will appear in the woods and just watch you. In the distance.
Up next, Braxy in NBA 2K.
Imagine being LeBron James and Braxy breaks your fucking ankle.
Yes.
The final video game depiction I'll mention is that one of the creatures you can summon in Scribblenauts is the Flatwoods Monster. Do you know Scribblenauts?
Mm-hmm.
It's this 3DS game where you can summon creatures by just typing their name in. Mm-hmm. So you type in like clown, a clown will appear. And if you type in Flatwoods Monster, Braxy shows up.
Cute.
I'm pulling up their design now. But
it is strange that he's so popular and like so well known like internationally as compared to like Mothman, you know? Like Mothman, in my opinion, is probably like the biggest like West Virginia cryptid.
Oh, definitely.
But then like Braxy's the most well known.
Internationally.
Yeah.
This is what she looks like in Scribblenauts. And to stay accurate to the lore, in Scribblenauts, Braxy has a special hatred for children. And if you summon Braxy and it encounters any child characters, they will instantly become sick because of the gas.
Oh my god. What the fuck?
I love that. Fuck. Even Yu-Gi-Oh! Has a card inspired by the Flatwoods Monster. It's Arcana Force 6, The Lovers. Basically, the theme of the series was tarot cards mixed with aliens, weirdly enough. And before you ask, yes, there's a Mothman card.
I mean, I don't play Yu-Gi-Oh, but I'd like to collect the cryptid cards, which is just two of them.
And he is the Emperor. Yeah, I'm pulling up.
Are Yu-Gi-Oh just fancy tarot cards?
Pretty much. This is their Flatwoods Monster one. Yeah. Flatwoods, super fucking popular.
If I made cryptid-themed glass-etched plates like I do...
Probably.
Should we sell them? Could we sell them?
I think so. Yeah, they're public domain.
Hello, Twitter.
Hey, I'll advertise the fuck out of it. You know that. And Braxy is also the subject of two different songs. There's The Phantom of Flatwoods, which was written in the time period in the 50s. But there's also The Bean by Argyle Goolsbee.
The Bean.
The Bean.
The Bean.
It's pretty good. I have it on my playlist. But I think it's time we finally get down to the final... second to final question. Penultimate predicament. What is the Flatwoods Monster? Now, there are skeptical explanations. According to Joe Nickel of the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry, He believes it was a combination of different factors causing a misidentification. The fiery ball is believed to be a comet, as there actually was a comet documented as going over the United States in a spot in Pennsylvania, Maryland, and West Virginia. However, that leaves the question of what exactly did the kids see? According to Joe Nickel, it was a barn owl. It was an owl perched up in a branch at the top of a pine tree.
What the fuck?
So when the light flashed on the owl, that's when they saw the orange lights in the eyes. And the general shape is supposed to be like a Christmas tree thing, almost. And the red glow was a airplane landing or hazard beacon just flashing in the background.
Okay, sure.
You might also ask, well, what about the smell? Good question. And according to Joe Nickel, it was a sulfur spring. Now, sulfur gas is a real thing and can have negative effects on the human body, very much like what the Mays experienced.
Yeah, but also, like, I've been around a couple of sulfur springs. So, in the in the campground that my family used to camp at when I was a kid, like, out near, like, Lost River State Park, there's a couple of sulfur springs around there. And, I mean, we literally used to go to these sulfur springs and drink the fucking water. I've never been sick from that.
Okay. I think it's different when it's in gas form, though.
Probably, but I mean, you can definitely smell it, like, from the water. Like, it smells like rotten fucking eggs. It's disgusting. Maybe it is different when it's in a gas form, but, like, I don't know. I feel like it could make you nauseous. I feel like maybe it could make you sick if it's strong enough. But, like, if you're just, like, in the general vicinity of a sulfur spring, I don't think that's enough to, like, make you violently fucking ill and swell your throat.
Well, on top of that, I feel like a sulfur spring would still be there the next day. Or fuck, still be there an hour afterwards.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I did find a diagram of Joe Nickel's explanation of the Flatwoods Monster, and it's what was described versus what he thinks it is.
No. It's just not good enough for me.
Yeah. Well, okay. Some other things on top of that is, yes, they were nervous, and anxiety can make you see things. But yeah. Gene Lemon specifically said he saw the orange lights, thought it was an animal, then swung his flashlight around, and that's when he saw Braxy. So the idea that he already thought it was an animal makes it, in my opinion, less likely that he would still see an animal and freak out.
Yeah.
You know? You feel me?
Yeah.
And plus, it feels like the logical explanation requires too many unrelated, random things.
For sure.
To coincide.
Yeah.
It requires the comet, the hazard beacon, the owl, and a tree. And a sulfur spring. Five things all to line up.
Exactly.
So, yeah. But that's the official conclusion reached by Project Blue Book. Or at least, that's what they told the public. Now you might be wondering about the skid marks. Supposedly,
I shit my pants. I'm sorry.
A local admitted taking a Jeep up there to check it out. But, like, Gray Barker said it's too steep for a vehicle to not get caught. And I feel like it wouldn't just stop.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. Especially because the place is wooded. There are trees. Why would it just suddenly appear at one tree and then stop at another?
Right.
Now, another cool thing about the Barker collection was that they had photos I took pictures of. This is actually the tree where the monster is seen. Put these on the Twitter as well.
But an owl would not, like, fit well enough in that tree for, like, the light and everything to line up the right way, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't see it. This is the Bailey Farm. really a scene.
Yeah.
I don't buy it. I'm just gonna kind of say it. I know I already said I believe in Braxy, but that just, it's too far-fetched.
Yeah.
If the logical explanation requires so many coincidences, I don't think it's really logical anymore.
No.
So the next irrational solution is a fucking alien.
Probably.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm leaning towards. Now, there is another, quote, rational explanation, but I'm going to have to get in a bit of the weeds for this. You see, Kathleen May report receiving a letter from the government explained that what she saw was not a comet nor an alien, but was an experimental rocket. I'll pull up the rocket they're talking about. But Ailey Stewart actually said that she was mistaken and that what she got wasn't a letter from the government, but was actually a pre-release press statement from Collier's Magazine. Collier's Magazine, which was doing a piece on a government rocket that was being launched, I believe, in Florida. Let me see if I can find it. This is it. This is a rocket.
Huh.
That they are supposed to have seen. Except this raises some questions pretty naturally. Namely, why would they see the rocket there if it was flying in the sky? Like, it couldn't land or anything. No. Rockets don't land.
No, they crash.
Yeah. Also, that rocket is supposed to be like 80 feet tall. Not exactly something you can confuse with a vaguely human-shaped entity.
No.
So, when the two rational explanations fail, that leaves the irrational one. That Flatwoods was visited by something now this Earth. That brings us to the final question, something every cryptozoologist must ask themselves when they come to the conclusion of a case. Do you believe?
I think I have to, honestly. Really? So, like, the Flatwoods Monster, I grew up with that one. You know, there's no, like, there's not any chance that I would be like, no, I don't believe it. Like, there's too many people that just go on and on about this story for years and years and years, and it's just, it's too much for me. I just, that one I can't let go. I think it's real.
Is Braxy your Mothman?
Braxy might be my Mothman, if I'm being honest with you. I know, like, Mothman is kind of yours, you know what I mean? But, like, Braxy might be my moth. Obviously, I believe in Mothman too.
Yeah.
But
like, you don't have that personal connection.
Like, yeah, I know. Do. But like, Braxy's my Mothman.
Well, I hope I did a good job representing her on the podcast. I'm gonna have to say yes. I think Braxy's real too. There's just so much going on here.
There is.
Investigated by the government. We have the skid marks. We have the oil.
I'm sorry.
Y'all. And the logical explanations don't make sense.
No.
They require so much elaborate coincidences that it is genuinely easier to believe that something paranormal happened. But yeah, that is going to bring us to the end of our opening to season 3 with 2 yeses back to back. Isn't that fun?
Woohoo!
Yeah. How are you feeling for the next season?
I think we can do this. I think it's gonna be a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I need to work on my
immediately cuts
research.
Oh yeah. We might be having a Jess-led episode in a bit. Or at least we might do it 50-50. But stay tuned for that. Be sure to subscribe, review. Word of mouth really helps us spread around. You can follow us on Twitter at The Cryptic Code. And we'll post updates, extra photos, things from our investigations, as well as announcements on when episodes come out. But until then, don't strangle children when they won't tell you about aliens.
Don't rub children's noses in smells they don't like.
Always smell the grass. And above all else, stay spooky out there. Good night.